The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Monday, 14th day of July, 2014. Let's take a quick look at the numbers. And these are some impressive numbers. The Dow is up 133 points. S&P is up 11. NASDAQ is up 31. Gold, on the other hand, down 30 bucks, and I don't have a number on crude just at the moment. Let me take a quick peek, and we'll let that ride. Gold down $30.30. That's going to be something. Yeah, there we go with crude down, yeah, all of a nickel a barrel, so not a big deal. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had an opportunity to spend some quality time with your family. Here it is again. Happy Monday. For those of you tuning in for the very first time, I want to extend a special welcome to you. You should be able to see the chart I have up, which is the S&P 500 E-Mini Futures. In the event you cannot see the chart, you may not be fully logged in, but that's okay. To fix that, just go to our homepage at cfrn.net, and on the right-hand side, click the big microphone, follow the instructions. You'll be registered not only for today, but you'll be good to go through the entire month of July. Come August 1st, we'll all register again. Not only do you have access to the charts, but you also have access to the chat box, which allows you to participate in the discussion, ask questions, share your thoughts, opinions, whatever that might be. Each and every day, we start out with our good word for the day. Then we go to our co-host, Mr. Michael B., for a recap of everything that happened in the live trading room today. The good, the bad, the indifferent. We don't sweep anything under the carpet. If it happened, we talk about it, because that's the reality of trading. A good word comes from Matthew. We're still talking about that Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Matthew 5:8. Happiness equals being pure in heart. Last Monday, we talked about that old Times magazine cover article that said, survey said, two-thirds of Americans, when polled, said they were not happy. Two-thirds, that's a big number. So we've spent all of last week, and now we're into the second week, talking about what is happy. Happiness equals being pure in heart. Matthew 5:8 says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So what does purity mean? Purity is a single-minded devotion to God. It's the opposite of double-mindedness. It's the opposite of those in the church who straddle the fence, having one foot in the world and one foot in the church, never really giving their hearts completely to God. It's the opposite of phoniness. It's the opposite of hypocrisy. Purity is being genuine. It is a devoted loyalty. It is a person without guile. It is a person who has no ulterior motives. Those qualities sound really good, don't they? But purity is not something that is easily experienced in our life. As a matter of fact, purity is downright unnatural because of our sinfulness. In Matthew 15:19-20, Jesus says, for out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man. To summarize what he is saying, look, the real problem lies in our sinful hearts. We're not naturally pure. It's not something we achieve. It comes with a cleansed heart. It is something we receive through repentant faith in Christ. The only way to be pure is to be cleansed of any impurity. And the only way to stay clean and pure is by trusting Jesus with total devotion. When we do, we see God. Most religions have the desire to see God, to experience God, but most religions are about man trying to reach up to God. Maybe it's through different rituals of religion or through good works and morality. Yet Christianity is very different from all the religions of the world. In Christianity, God has reached down to man through his ultimate revelation of himself in Christ. So when Christ died on the cross for our sins, he offers us the mercy of God, something we don't deserve. In fact, we receive forgiveness of sin, and with forgiveness comes cleansing or purification. When we confess and repent of our sin, cleansing comes. And every time we fall, then confess and repent and again and again and again, change comes. You want to see God? Trust Jesus to cleanse you and be fully devoted, no matter what. And that's our good word for the day. And Michael, I believe I hear you there in the background.
Yes,
or
that is
maybe
me.
Maybe I don't.
Yeah,
ooh, okay.
That's me. That's me. You hear me now.
And so, are you going to go back to work with whatchamacallit to try to get your machine running? Or
I am. I got to get that done. Cause
you know, they sent a survey. They sent a thing through wanting to know how that went, and so I didn't fill it out. Did you get a copy of it?
I must have, but I didn't look at it.
Yeah, okay. They were wanting an evaluation of how the session went, and I thought, well, I don't think the session's over, so I didn't.
No,
didn't
it's
answer
not done
it.
Yet. Not done yet. Okay. I got to call him back because the guy, he was, you know, he wants to take control of the computer and all that.
Right.
And I'm going to let him.
you have to.
Yeah, I got to get it done. I mean, because that's the computer, I got to go down to the Cape again tonight. And so I'll be working from there tomorrow, and that's the computer that I bring to the Cape. So.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so I got to get it going. I mean, I could take this one down, but I'd rather not. I'd rather it be that one. That's the one that I have all the live stuff on anyway.
You're going back to the Cape again, huh?
Yeah, I got to go. I got to finish. I didn't finish last time I was there.
Hook it up.
Yeah, just probably tonight to tomorrow night, probably, is my plan. Because Jake has a camp on Wednesday. Lexi has a camp, but I have somebody taking her to and from that. But Jake's camp on Wednesday morning, I had said, you know, to the woman who's taking Lexi and her daughter to the camp right now, I had said that I would take her son and Jake. Wednesday morning, he's going, it's actually an Apple camp. He's going to the Apple store to learn. There's some kind of camp there that they have to learn about cool stuff on an iPad.
That sounds neat.
Yeah. It
should be good. Time does that take place?
9:30. Yeah, his is at 9:30. So I have to drop the boys off, and Carrie's going to pick them up.
Okay.
That's my plan. All right, so everybody should be looking at my charts now.
Yep, I can see them.
Now, again, on this computer, I don't have the actual spreadsheet, so I'm just going to have to jump in and show you the trades that we took and all that. Hang on, and I want to show everyone. I got to start my recording here, too. 5,552. I had kept it at an even 4,000 for so long. All right. Emails. all right, I'm going to start the recording, and we'll get into it. All right. Here we go. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Monday, the 14th day of July, 2014. Let's see. Today in the live trading room, we made 5 ticks on the Russell. We lost 5 ticks on gold. We made 1 tick on crude, and we made 12 ticks on gas. It took us 87 minutes and 12 trades this morning to get to our goal for the day. Typically, it wouldn't have taken us that long, but I had some technical issues first thing in the morning, and I missed 3 trade setups. All right, I should be back. Okay, I missed 3 trade setups first thing in the morning. That all would have been the goal for the day. But it is what it is. You know, I missed the trade setups, and I had to work after that. Anyway, so before I get into the actual trade setups, I want to show you guys how to take the free trial. If you have not taken our free trial in the past, then you just need to go to www.cfrn.net and right here on the side, put in your name, put in your email address, click register for a free trial. Once you click register for a free trial, you'll be sent a link. You'll be sent a link, it's a confirmation link, in the email that you put in here, so make sure you put in a good email. It's going to go to that email that you put in there. And once you click on that confirmation link, then we know that you registered. Once we know that you've registered, you'll be sent a couple of emails. One will be, it'll say, like, welcome Bob to CFRN. And inside that email, there'll be all kinds of stuff telling you about the indicators, about us, what the password is, and the link to get into the live trading room, the luxurious 5-day trial in our live trading. And you will also find another email will be sent to you. The second email will say something like CFRN DT Pro chart setup and Ninja chart setup and trade setup details. Please watch this video. When it says please watch this video, we really, really should go watch that video because it gets you up to speed as to what we do in the live trading room. Or at least I try to get you up to speed with that video as to what we do in the live trading room. All right. That's it. Okay, that's all you have to do. There's no credit card or anything like that. Just your name, your email address, you click the link. Okay? And that is that. Now, today, our trading. You can see I'm on my backup computer again. I was trying to work stuff out with the Citrix this morning, and I didn't get it done in time, so I missed the first 10 minutes this morning. So I had to go to my backup computer. That's why I'm in demo mode right now on the backup computer. Okay. But this morning the results are the results, and we traded the way we always trade. So let me start off with crude. Okay. On crude this morning, oh, I know, Jim. On crude this morning, we ended with plus one tick. Our first trade on crude, well, we missed. This was a pre-market one right in here. Okay, then there was nothing in here. Our first trade on crude was right here, and this was a mistake. All right, I did that one wrong. I should not have taken the trade right there. I had the order on. When I was looking at a different trend line, I was looking for the up close, and I had the order on, and I forgot to take the order off, and I went and did something else, and then it entered me into it, and it went down as soon as it entered me into it. And one of the partners in the live trading room brought it to my attention that it wasn't a valid trade, but by that time it was too late, and I was stopped out of it. So I got minus 8 ticks on the first trade, but it was not a valid trade. So the next trade that I took was right over here. I got a break even on that one. Then I missed this one. This was a down close below the trend line. This was a down close below the trend line. And this was a down close below the trend line. I got 9 ticks profit on this one. That brought me to plus 1 tick. Okay. 9 ticks profit on that. Got me to plus 1 tick on the day for the crude. That was 8 ticks profit. It got me to break even. And this one over here, I got 1 tick profit on. That's what brought me to plus 1 tick. This was toward the end of the live trading room. We put this one on, and you know, it worked out well. And the follow-up right after it, this was during the break, worked out very well. Okay, and that was it. We had a bearish cross here, tested the BBC with a down close right in there. That worked out okay too. All right, but that was it on the crude today. We had 1 tick profit on the crude. All right. Let's do the Russell next. Okay. Now we'll do the Russell. On the Russell today, we had a few trades. We'll start at the beginning where I wasn't actually there yet because I think there was one Russell trade. Yeah, right in here at 9:30, we had bearish cross, a pullback up, tested the BBC with a down close. So there was an opportunity to short the Russell right there for that move down. Okay. There was another opportunity to short the Russell right here for this move down. All right. And the momentum trade right there. But so there were 1, 2, 3 trades right there that we missed in the first 10 minutes. Two of those would have gotten our goal in the first minute or two. But sadly, we were not available in the first minute or two. Our first Russell trade was right over here. The first Russell trade we actually took. There was one right here that we missed, okay, off the BBC. again, that probably would have gotten our goal for the day. The one that we actually took was right here. We got 5 ticks profit on that one. And then we lost one right here. We got a loss, so we're at -3 ticks on that. We took 2 ticks profit on this trade right here, putting us at -1 tick. And we missed a trade here. We got a break-even trade here. This trade was a momentum trade. Really? And this trade over here was just a down close below the trend line. Okay. Let's see. Over here we had another trade on the up close above the trend line. Okay, we missed that one. And this was a momentum trade that we didn't take. I think this was probably the last trade that we took, wasn't it? On this trade, we made 6 ticks profit, I think. I'm pretty sure we made 6 ticks profit on that one. Yeah, we did. Oh. Yeah, 6 ticks profit on that, putting us at +5 ticks on the day. We ended up with a break-even trade over here. Okay. Or actually, I think this was +1 tick, but I didn't write it down. This was 6 ticks profit, putting us at +5 ticks, and then we'll just call this a break-even trade, though I think it was a little better than break-even. But that was it in the live trading room for the Russell. After the live trading room, let's see. Nothing. Nope. That was it, guys. That was it. Right. So I am gonna slide that all the way over there. And the next thing that we look at will be gold. We ended the day with +5 ticks, Russell. Okay. And on gold, we had just a couple of trades. A few trades. We started out with a break-even trade right here. But I'm pretty sure we missed something in the first few minutes on gold. Right. There was a down close right here that would have been a break-even for me. And an up close right here that would have probably gotten 5 to 6 ticks profit. That was it. Then the trade that we actually did take right here. The trade that we actually did take got us a break-even on the first trade. And the second trade was right here. We ended up losing that trade, okay? Those of you guys that went to the seminar, I mean, you can see stuff all over right here. You would have been long there. You would have been long there. You would have been short here. You would have been long there. That one wouldn't have worked out. You would have been long there. Short there. Long there. Short there. And the stuff that we went over. Anyway, what we actually did in the live trading room, though, we lost on this one. Okay? We were break even on that one. We lost on that one. That put us at -8 ticks. We got 3 ticks profit on this one right here. That put us at -5 ticks. Okay? -5 ticks on gold at that point. All right. I don't think we took any other trades on gold. No, we didn't. Right around here, around 1140, the gold really started to bounce around and go crazy. We were still in the live trading room at that time, but I was pretty much done trading. Since then, there really hasn't been much. You know, this down close off the BBC right here with bearish divergence in a red cycle. All right, little momentum trade going on right now. That momentum trade would have been from right here. Okay, 1306.7. But that was it, guys. That was all we had going on this morning. All right. That was the gold, the crude, the Russell. I did the Russell, right? Gold, crude, and Russell. And now I'll do the soybeans. On the soybeans, we only took one trade this morning. Okay, we had just the one trade this morning on the soybeans. And it was right here. Okay. We had, it was the down close right here, but it pulled back right away and I got into it at 81, I think. Yeah, I think I got into that at 81, and I got out of it at 81, right over here. All right, then the soybeans turned up. Now, one of the things about the soybeans, in the first 10 minutes, the soybeans gave 1, 2, and possibly 3 trade setups. The first 2 would have met the goal for the day. The last one, just eyeballing it, if you got in here at 84, it went up above 86. So all 3 of those in the first 10 minutes would have been the goal for the day. Sadly, I missed all 3 of them because I was having technical issues. But right over here, we took the down close below the trend line, and we ended up taking a break even on that trade. Okay? Even on that trade. Let's see. What else? Natural gas. We only took a couple of trades on the gas. Okay, we just took a couple of trades on the gas. Let me show you those. All right. Our first trade on the gas, well, first let's go back and see what we missed in the first few minutes. I don't think we missed anything on the gas in the first few minutes. Actually, we missed what would have been a stop out right there on the gas, I think. 55 up to 64, yeah, that would have stopped out. So we would have missed a stop out there on the gas, and we did miss a stop out on the gas. The next available trade was down here, but we didn't take that because we had this big move down, and I was telling everyone, in the big move down, the very first little opportunity after a big move down often has a deep pullback. So it gave the look right here of a short trade, but then it had a deeper pullback, and we jumped in it after it dropped down below the deeper pullback, okay? And we took 10 ticks profit out of the first trade. And then it changed directions. I ended up not getting filled here, and I did get filled over here. On this one, I got 2 ticks profit. Right? I went long and got 2 ticks profit on that one. Let's see, over here, we had the down close right there. Okay, currently, that's a short trade right now. And that is on the natural gas. Okay. Let's see, any other markets that I traded? I don't think so. I think that's about it. Yeah, that's about it. All right, so we ended the day with a +5 on the Russell, -5 on gold, +1 on crude, flat on the beans, and +12 on gas. Okay, we took, 14 trades today. It took us 87 minutes and 12 trades to get to our goal for the day. 87 minutes. If I'd have been there in the first 10 minutes, I'd have gotten it in the first 10 minutes. But it is what it is, right? So it was a little bit of a struggle after the first 10 minutes. I want to show you guys how to take the free trial again. Okay? To take the free trial, you just need to go to CFRN.net, like this. Go right there to CFRN.net. And put your name in there, put your email address in there, a valid email address in there. Click register for a free trial, and then go look in that email for the confirmation link. You need to click the confirmation link. If you don't click the confirmation link, we'll never know that you took a free trial. Okay? That's it, guys. With that, wrap it up and send it back out to Phoenix, Arizona. Or possibly even Las Vegas, Nevada.
Alrighty. Very good. Thanks, Michael.
All right. No problem. I'm going to have to log right off so I can do this Citrix thing, okay?
All right.
Thank you, guys. Does anybody have any questions? Let me ask you that before I log off. Does anybody have any questions about anything that I just said or went over? Anybody? Be happy to do it again.
Alright, okay. I think we're good.
Alright, we're good. I'm gonna log off. I gotta plug the other computer in and get it all going.
Alright, buddy.
So I can call the Citrix guy. Alright, thanks. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Alright. Well, let's take a look here. Last night was very quiet on the Globex Open. Not a lot of opportunities. And we only had, let's see, we had an alert on the S&P, we had an alert on soybeans, NASDAQ, and crude. NASDAQ and crude never triggered. Never triggered. On the S&P 500, we had an alert to consider being long above 1968. So we broke through 68, and the hour we broke through, we got all the way up to 69.75. So that's 7 ticks, 1 tick shy of our 8 tick goal. So what do? We come back, we test that important number, 68. And we make another run, and then we come back, and then we finally, you know, if you hung around for that one extra tick, you finally got it over here. This candle finally hit 70 and a quarter. And then so far today, we have a swing high of 1974. The opening candle last night, let's go find that. Okay, the 13. Okie doke. Right here, this little candle is Friday's close. And then this candle represents the Globex open. And so since the current session began last night at 6 p.m. Eastern, we opened at 1964, and we put in a swing high at 1974. So that's some pretty simple math for the session. Now, not just the day session, or RTH as they call it, regular trading hours, but for the entire session, we have a 10-point range from 1964 to 1974. Our trigger was at 68, looking for 2 points, that's our daily goal, $100 per contract per trade. We were, the first hour, 7 ticks. You hung around 1, 2, 3 more hours. The other tick came. You never had to deal with any drawdown issues in the ensuing hours. You just had to have a lot of patience. And if you stuck with it, well, then you had a pretty nice trade. On the soybeans, let's take a quick look at those, because that's the only other one that triggered. Crude did not trigger, and NASDAQ did not trigger. Soybeans, we had an alert to consider being long above 1082, and the high was 1086.75 in that first hour, the one that broke through and triggered us right here. Okay. We then came back, in fact, in that same hour after we ran up and put in the high at 86.75, we only needed to go to 84, to establish our target, which is 2 pennies. 2 pennies is the same as 2 points in the S&P. And so there's 84 right there. So that would be your 2-penny target. Okay. And then price did that thing that price does. It came back to test the important price, important area at 82. Actually, got below 82, which is good because that gives you a running start, if you will, you know, as you pass back up through 82 again. Does the same thing, comes right back down, gets below 82, and so there was 1, 2, total of 3 opportunities. No, I take that back. Because we closed here, a total of 4 opportunities to go from 1082 to 1084. But we're just looking for one that gives us our 2 pennies. And that's kind of it for us. We just didn't do anything else. Again, it was very quiet and remains quiet. Let's take a look just real quick, and then we'll head straight to Vegas, talk to David. Crude, still hasn't done anything. Still hasn't done what we were looking for it to do. Let me turn this into a daily chart. And we'll bring up the S&P. Get rid of our drawing objects. There we go. So this is a daily chart of the S&P 500 E-mini futures. And as David mentioned last week, and you know, you just have nothing you can do but agree, this here is unusual, runaway, anything you want to call it, any bullish term you want to apply. It fits. Have we put in a new all-time high today? No, for once. You know, how long has it been? Let's see. We've gone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wow, we're in our 7th day without putting in an all-time historic high. Amazing. That all-time high being 78.25. And as we sit right now at 72, is that all-time high within striking distance? Absolutely. And overhead, you know, there hasn't been a lot of talk about it with the Dow. Boy, they just went on and on about the 17,000 and what a big deal that would be. I haven't heard that same level of talk about the S&P and the 2,000 mark. In my opinion, I think it's more important because this represents 500 best of breed companies, not just 30. Now, the criteria for being in the S&P 500 and the criteria for being in the Dow 30, a little bit different, but they're all high-flying companies. Again, best of breed, all doing well, running on all cylinders. So, anyway, we are not as close as we've ever been to the 2000 mark. We're a couple of points off of that, but it's right there. Just around the corner. All right, stand by for a very brief station identification, and we'll be right back with Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310 and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. Got some exercise, perhaps. Ate good food, and generally had a nice time.
Hey, I think you need to do that thing you did the other day where you unplugged that cable on your camera or something.
I just did it right now, and my voice should be returning to normal.
Absolutely. Perfect.
So there's something with USB that if you have many USB things mm-hmm. plugged in and any of them are loading it at all, it actually detracts from one of the others. So
yes.
That's something that we can see by that. So there you are. It's a pleasure to be back and to take a look at some of the upcoming things for the markets here. Things are a little quiet today, and all of us have had quite a period leading up to today, you know, lots and lots of trades and lots of indications. I hate to be the one that says it has to slow down at some point, but, you know, it may slow down a little bit this week. We'll see.
We have there's always even within five or six markets, there's usually something happening, you know, of importance, you know, some bigger thing. But it is a little slow, a little quiet. The S&P is attempting to move higher, and you know we'll get into all the markets. But what we don't want is just a completely lackluster kind of market. That's what we would like to avoid if we can, and we will. You know, I think we're not going to see that. We may see a quiet market here or there, but I think in general we're going to still see some pretty good behavior, and I think the rest of July looks pretty good.
So far today for the S&P, we do have a 10-point range. You know, nothing big, but we've certainly seen worse this time of year.
Mm-hmm. We have seen worse. For people that are really new to the markets, just a few summers ago, we had a few summers where it was really I don't know how many summers that was, but I remember one of them, the S&P, would open up and have like a 3-point range for the first 4.5 hours of the day or something, and then close with like a 6-point range on the day, which was just ridiculous. We would have been wiser sending people just home on those days, but we're hoping not to see that. We're hoping not to see that behavior again for a while.
There's a question. Are we interrupting your breakfast?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
Keep talking.
All right. We'll carry the conversation.
I had to get something to eat. I'm working hard here for our subscribers. I got to take a breather, and I apologize for that. But, yeah, sometimes I don't get a chance to really get anything inside of me, and by this time of the day I'm already pretty hungry. That's why I'm so thin, because I don't eat.
Well, you stand a lot, too.
I'm sitting now, but the stand-up desk is a great thing. You know, the people that I know, I only know one other person that is actually using him. He's an attorney, and he just loves it. It's fantastic, and it allows you to, you know, feel like you've got a lot more freedom than having to sit the whole day. So there you are.
You know, I struggled through the headlines today looking for anything really of interest, and I'll tell you, not only are the markets quiet, but on the news front, things are pretty quiet. Apple denies that the iPhone threatens Chinese national security. The iPhone.
Are the Chinese a threat? Are asserting that it threatens their
security? Apparently, Apple has denied claims that its iPhone represents a threat to Chinese national security following a report made by the state broadcaster. Apple has denied claims that its iPhone is a threat following a report made by the state broadcaster alleging the smartphone could reveal state secrets. State-run Chinese Central Television said iOS 7's frequent locations function could be used to leak information on where its users' locations are and when they'd been there. A researcher interviewed by the channel on Friday said such information was extremely sensitive data which could reveal state secrets. Apple has since released a statement saying the company does not track its users' locations, has never done so, and has no plans to ever do so. We appreciate China's effort to help educate customers on a topic we think is very important. And as we've stated before, Apple has never worked with any government agency from any country to create a backdoor into any of our products or services. We have never allowed access to our servers, and we never will. So there you go. Yeah, that's it.
Well, I'd like to say to China, welcome to the internet. Welcome to the world where, yes, things that you have could be, you know, picked up over the internet. I mean, what a surprise. You know, everything you put on the internet is subject to risk.
Yeah. Yeah, we there's no secrets anymore. It's just all out there in the open. And if you don't want somebody to know about it, the best thing you can do is just not do it. Period.
Yeah, just don't put it on the internet. Don't get on the internet.
Well, it's hard to avoid the internet because, as we talked last week about, even with the Google glasses, you know, you may just be going to the grocery store to buy a carton of milk, or at the coffee shop to get a latte, and you don't know that your image and your latitude and longitude and all this other pertinent metadata is being streamed across the internet to some audience, be it a single person, a room full of people, a government agency, because some guy's walking along behind you wearing Google Glass, you know? I mean, that's just one example of it's hard to avoid the internet these days. And even the grocery store that you're in or the coffee shop that you're in, they got cameras running too. So it's tough.
Smile.
Smile. Yeah, a lot of stores now have little signs that say, if you plan to shoplift, be sure and smile for the camera.
I don't understand why we, and I said this a minimum of 14, 15 years ago on a radio program, this was a talk show thing, why aircraft do not have cameras inside them the same way that we have cameras in stores and 7-Elevens streaming to their data recorder or streaming to a satellite, to an offline, you know, on the ground, you know, the cloud, except in reverse. The stuff is on the ground, or maybe to the cloud. But the airplane, you know, when something happens in an airplane, we have to go reverse engineer everything. And we do have, you know, a lot of information that's in the black box and so on. And nine times out of ten, the black box survives the crash. In fact, I don't know that I've heard of any crashes where the black box didn't. But it would really be helpful, I think, to have cameras inside of airplanes like we have them everywhere else, recording what happens on the flight so that we can have a much better picture of what went wrong when things do go wrong and we can make things safer. But there has been some force at work to make sure that doesn't happen. I don't know what that is. I don't know why that would be. But it is that way. Doesn't that strike you as strange that there's no cameras on airplanes where there are every other location you can go? There's cameras in elevators, in 7-Eleven, on
did
sidewalks.
You ever, did you ever come up with a reason as to why they don't?
No, no, I didn't come up to a reason. I just know they don't, or I don't actually know they don't, but I don't believe they do. I don't think there's any live streaming camera or streaming video of the cockpit or any other part of the plane inside. Let alone outside, having very small camera embedded right into the plane so that it can look at the fuselage from the backside, and if something were to happen, it, you know, all kinds of, all that streaming data would help tremendously. It's no brilliant idea to say that that should be being done. I wonder why it isn't being done. Why do we have to have absolutely no visual at all of the most important thing, which is a plane carrying 300 people, and not be able to, after the fact, take a look at the video. Instead, we have to go based on the black box, which is merely, it's doing a great thing, but it's recording all of the engine, altimeter, and all these other functions, and we have to reverse engineer from that what happened. If we had cameras on the back of the plane looking forward, you know, a very tiny little pinhole camera that's right on the tail, that basically is constantly viewing the plane, the whole fuselage of the plane, plus cameras inside, streaming. I don't know, you know, what we couldn't figure out at that point. But we don't do that. There are no companies in any part of the world that I know of that put planes cameras on their planes.
Is it possible they do it and just don't make a big issue of it? Or
I don't think so.
And especially after 9/11,
you would think they would
be monitoring them.
Yeah,
John comments that even where he lives, even the buses, you know, like city buses, have cameras.
Yeah. So What is that? I hope somebody can answer that for me. I'm not conspiracy theorying it or anything like that. I'm just saying I'm pretty sure it doesn't happen. What's the story? So maybe one of the listeners can help us.
Okay. Well, if anybody knows, feel free to pipe right in. In Israel, airstrikes on Gaza and rocket fire on Israel have continued as Israel's operation against Palestinian militants entered its seventh day. Palestinian officials say 172 people in Gaza have been killed since the offensive began last Tuesday. Israel says nearly 1,000 rockets have been fired from Gaza in that time. It said it shot down a Palestinian drone near Ashdod on Monday morning. Earlier, thousands of people fled from northern Gaza after an Israeli warning. And it was interesting that, you know, Israel told the folks, hey, you should leave the area, get, you know, clear out because, and the Palestinian authorities told the people, you know, go back in your houses. And so, this whole thing, this is beyond a powder keg. I don't know what happened.
Right.
I mean.
Right.
It's quite alarming. And it's been no surprise that it was coming. And surprise is that it hasn't erupted into full-scale war sooner. But maybe this is. I mean, we're talking about when these folks go to the grocery store every day. I mean, you know, they hear, you know, bombs bursting in air. They see the rockets' red glare at night. I mean, it just goes on. And on and on.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does, and it's a horrible way to live. 1,000 bombs. I mean, they are at war. Anybody who, you know, 1,000 missiles go off, that's a war. So the war is on, and when you look at crude oil, and you think to yourself, this decline that we're having in crude oil is occurring, you know, right along with all of this great uncertainty. That's why I'm really surprised and impressed by crude's ability to decline. I couldn't have, under any conditions, you could have put a gun to my head and I wouldn't have gone short crude oil. So, but yet crude oil has had a very, very powerful and directional decline and really basically continues to do so even into today, even though we're you know, they're bouncing a little bit here, so that's, you know, they have a small respite from that. But it's been a surprising who shorts crude oil in the face of this type of uncertainty and powder keg type of thing where at any moment something could happen. And I realize that, you know, there was word that OPEC had guaranteed in some way, maybe
right.
Said, hey, don't worry. But OPEC isn't an all-seeing, all-knowing crystal ball. I mean, OPEC may very well not be able to replace oil because too much of it gets blown up. I mean, who knows what the next thing is. But that apparently was part of the reason that people felt there was no risk. But I don't put myself in the group of people who could have shorted crude oil and gone to bed. So, but yet crude oil has had a tremendously powerful and directional move on the downside. And I think it probably has surprised a lot of people, certainly not just myself. But I'm very interested in crude to see how they resolve the position that they're in now. We'll see. We'll talk about the markets in a little bit here, but I'm just commenting that all of this news is really relatable directly to crude oil in many ways and the fears that would surround a supply constraint, a blown up pipeline, a whole facility that might, you know, come crumbling down or get put into somebody else's hands. So.
NASA, is holding a meeting to discuss the search for life beyond Earth. They say observatories are making new discoveries about hundreds of other worlds in our galaxy. Michael Merrifield, a professor of astronomy at the University of Nottingham, told Five Live Breakfast, some TV show, probably within the next 10 or 20 years, we'll find life elsewhere. Now, that's an interesting comment coming from a NASA representative. What information does he have to, you know, is,
right.
I mean, is he just offering his opinion? I don't know. I mean, we have become aware more recently, more so than ever, just how large the universe is, far larger than we ever imagined, and we still don't know truly how large it could be. But for him to make a statement that in 10 to 20 years, yeah, I think that's an opinion. I don't know how that got onto a news page, but there it is. See, that's how desperate they were for news today, because they put that out as news. Oh, Citibank's going to pay a big fine. Yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say unless you are really closed-minded about science and just the nature of life, it is without a doubt that there is intelligent life all throughout the universe. We may not have seen it in our little speck of an area compared to the size of the universe, but all life is intelligent, number one. And number two, the term intelligent life, of course, really means, you know, a sentient being, somewhat in some way, shape, or form like a human being, but maybe with different form and different kinds of intelligence and so on. But there's no doubt that there are other sentient beings in the universe. Life didn't just do it here, and I know that there are biblical interpretations that also, you know, would lay claim to man being the only thing, but that's when this goes to that thing again. This is going to be another one of those things when life really is discovered elsewhere that is going to have to, people are going to have to change their
I'm not familiar with any reference that says where all there are. I mean, it speaks specifically about us when God created the heavens and the earth. I mean,
sure.
I don't
have to think back a little bit, because I remember being, and I do want to say that I don't have an outright verse for it, but I've been under the impression, and it's been a long time since I've reviewed that there are certain forms of Christianity that, you know, there's 100 different ones, Presbyterian, this, that, and the other, and there's certain ones that believe that this is the, for whatever reason, they've interpreted some verse, something in the Bible to say that this is, you know, this is all there is, and that we're the...
Well, I agree that some, a group of people's interpretation may state that, but just from a biblical point of
view,
I don't know of anything offhand that says
we're it. I'll double check that, but we're not it, and there are other things. Even though I don't have any proof of that, I'm quite certain myself that we will find ultimately that life didn't just do all of its magic on just the planet Earth. It forms anywhere and everywhere it can. And if it can't, it figures out a way to form anyway, like at the bottom of the ocean where the pressures are so intense that it would crush brick down to, you know, if you put a brick down there, it would just crush the brick into nothing, into powder. But yet there are life forms down there that are perfectly designed to, you know, manage that pressure beautifully and live full lives, reproduce, and all these other things that take place under very hostile environments. There's life that forms in very acidic areas, or not acidic, but, you know, caustic areas in volcanoes, where, I mean, it would just burn a hole through anything, and yet life forms and creatures form that can live in these underwater volcanoes that somehow they've adapted, or they just are created that way. So it doesn't just end with the Earth. We already have evidence that there have been rivers and large water channels and so on Mars. And where there's water, there's going to be some form of life, microbial or otherwise. So life is doing this everywhere, and there are going to be, we will find that there are other, I always say, hey, every form of life is intelligent. There is no non-intelligent life. Even a single cell has great intelligence relative to what it needs to do in life. It has a full scope of what it's supposed to do, how to avoid this, how to get to that, and all that. So all life is intelligent, but I think we're really referring to, the sort of sentient beings that can say, hey, hi, I'm a whatever, person, an astronaut, or whatever, that have, full self-awareness. And I do believe that that is out there. And I believe that not only is it out there, it's out there in quantities. We just are in an area where for whatever reason, they can, that we don't see them, or they don't come over here, or if they do come over here,
they're in our blind spot.
They're in our blind spot, whatever. But they will find life out there. We know, it would be scientifically and mathematically one of the greatest leaps of faith to say that it actually would never be found. Anything is possible, and it could be the case that nothing else is out there at all. But the universe is a very, very large place, and I think we're going to find that in a place as large as the universe, it may even be that the universe isn't a place. It may be that the universe is a bunch of places. It may be, there's the multiverse. There's all these different ways that this thing could be laid out. Life is going to be out there in one form or another. So it's coming. I agree with them. We're gonna find other sentient beings that can interact, have understanding, have emotion, whatever. Whatever it is, life creates things in so many different ways. But isn't it interesting that every creature that is formed, that is created, has great intelligence relative to what its needs are in life? And that goes all the way down to the cellular level. Even diseases are very clever. They figure out ways to hijack this cell and make it do that. And, all the things that they do show intelligence. It's no.
Yeah, they learn to, overcome.
Yeah, if you're pure Darwinian, you kind of believe. If you're really pure Darwinian, you're going to believe that it's just the survival of the fittest, and the very fittest ones continue to survive and stuff. But it's a great theory. It's a beautiful theory in many ways, because it does explain. It's one way of explaining how all of this happened, that through mutation and through reproduction, creatures, and both large and small, reproduce, and the ones that can't, make it, they tend to die. The ones that can make it tend to continue to reproduce, and they tend to continue to pass on those genes that are very good. It's a very difficult theory to overcome, because it's so simple and yet so profound in its explanations of what we see. But it still may be that it's bigger than just that. The ability for all these different creatures, if you're just thinking in terms of whether or not there is an evolution, or whether creatures are created, and so on.
Yeah, if we evolved from monkeys, why do we still have monkeys?
Well, yeah, there's lots and lots of questions. Maybe you can evolve from something by mutation. Let's just take completely any outside source out. You evolve through some form of mutation. That mutation doesn't necessarily affect the long line of DNA that was running to create those monkeys. They continue to produce, but through the whole Darwinian thing is that through mutation, new things get put together, new abilities and so on, and those become the beginning of some new thing. Yes, the monkeys can continue to be here. My question would be, because we still never really solved it yet, as I understand it, and I haven't looked at it in some time, but we haven't yet solved the issue of a big part of the theory of evolution has to do with the fact that it takes millions of years for these mutations to happen, and yet it appears that creatures form spontaneously without millions of years of buried bones and things of the halfway point of those creatures. Like, you know, birds are really fish that somehow mutated and got out of the water and through millions of years, you know, mated at their level and somehow produced enough. They produced wings, you know, ultimately to try to deal with their environment. But we don't really have millions of years of the halfway points between fish and birds. If we did, if that was really there, if it really does take millions of years to do that, to do the gradient, you know, change from one creature to another, mutating, where are all those fossils? You know, where are the millions of years of half fish, half bird?
Right.
We don't have them.
No.
And I don't think we're going, honestly, I don't think we're going to find them. I don't think we're going to find the halfway stuff, halfway between the originating thing that we knew was there already and the thing that we're saying it morphed into over millions of years. We've had a lot of time and a lot of archaeology, and we're not finding that. So I don't think that's necessarily something we're going to suddenly stumble onto. You know, hey, Ted, I just found one of those halfway fish, halfway bird thingies that we've been talking about for the in the textbooks for the last, you know, 100 years, and here it is. And by the way, it wouldn't just be one. It would be millions of them, of course, because it's a gradient process. But what really appears to happen in the fossil record is things just appear. That's what appears to be happening. We don't have millions of years of it. We suddenly just see it. It appears somewhere in our history, and boom, there it is. So it's very interesting how life produces all this. I mean, putting aside any magic, you know, if you're going to say, you know, somebody just snaps their fingers and chickens are there or something like that, just looking at it from a non-magical perspective, it appears things that we know about and still have to this day that we had millions of years back, that they just appear at some point in history, and we don't have any buildup in the fossil record that shows those creatures having gone through this morph to get to that point.
Right.
So, and yet, the opposing side is that we have evidence that Darwin's theory is correct at the cellular level, because we see that type of mutation going on and new things being formed and life dealing with it. So it's a very complex issue until we solve it. Once we solve it, it's going to be fine. But it is very complicated to try to figure out, and it's an endless discussion to get into people about whether there's evolution or whether this was all created, because there is...
Yeah, I go with
there's
the
a reason they call
creation.
It the, yeah, yeah. I mean, it, they, there's a reason they call it the theory of evolution, is because it is a theory.
It is.
And they would answer, well, it's also a theory of, you know, creation. Well, one thing about creation is you can't deny it was created.
That's right.
We got one step on you there. It was created. There it is. Okay, so the creation part isn't the theory. The theory is was it created entirely as it is, or did it have to go through this evolutionary process, and so on. So it's a very complicated question, and I don't know the answer. That's my show. Good night.
And Jim says we're not evolved from apes, we're evolving into apes.
Right. That's good. I like that. And there's a new Planet of the Apes coming out, by the way.
Yeah, and they say the only thing that makes it worth looking at is how well they did the apes this time.
Mm-hmm. We do apes well.
Pete said that if you look into the union contracts of flight attendants, it might have something to do with their rights as far as the cameras go.
Okay. But, I thought he was going to tie that into evolution somehow.
No.
I was about to laugh.
No, that's well, you know, good. Pete, I understand your line of thinking there, but what about, you know, I mean, in a department store, why would a flight attendant have different rights than just, you know, like a store clerk working at Old Navy? You may have
right.
something
we have,
there. I don't
well,
know.
Well, we have cameras that overview that are on the outside of stores that film all kinds of. How do you you know they see people coming and leaving stores or in the front of the stores? You're on video anytime and anywhere anybody wants you to be if they have a shop of some kind, and they even have cameras outside their store. That's how the FBI often will, you know, track criminals by seeing their car drive off because there's cameras there. And the city has cameras. You know, certain parts of the city has cameras. So the whole idea that they're I certainly appreciate you commenting on it, but I don't think anyone has a right not to be filmed in public because it's public. You know, you're exposing yourself out there. People are allowed to pick up a camera and take a picture of you. It's not against the law. In the same way, people are allowed to video you and film you, and it's a big Supreme Court thing at some point, probably has been already. But there's an awful lot of that going on, and like Dwayne says, in every possible area. I don't know why a flight attendant would have any special, especially when they have to weigh the value of do we anger the flight attendants, but we learn more about how to keep people, hundreds of people safe and not die? Well, of course we do that, you know. So I don't think that's the issue, but it's a good shot, but I don't think that's the case. I think there is some other, possibly that video is, I don't know. I think if there was a technical reason.
Jeanette says that there is no reasonable expectation of privacy in a public place.
Right.
Bill of Rights does not apply there.
Now, is there a reasonable expectation of privacy on an airplane or a train or a helicopter or a taxi? I don't know.
No. She says that.
Oh, yeah, I would think not.
Yeah.
So it may be a technical reason about streaming the video. Maybe streaming video takes up a lot of space, and they're not. Or maybe they could be streaming to the cloud. You know, why not? I don't know. Maybe it's a technical issue. I don't know. I know that we stream from the space station pretty good. I see the people floating around up there with big blobs of Jell-O floating by, and they're trying to grab it and eat it. But it seems like it seems like that would be a good idea to help us understand more about any of the bad things that can, but usually don't, happen in flight. If you think about how many flights go off a day, it's really an incredible technology that we have in flight that, 10 zillion airplanes can go up and come down safely every single day. It's just astonishing how good the technology is, and yet we still have a lot to learn and design into airplanes to make sure that there are, that it's even safer and so on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm still, when I fly, which I haven't in quite some time, I'm sitting on the plane and I enjoy the feeling of the acceleration and the taking off, but I have to tell you, I'm always nervous flying because I know that, yeah, I am. Not to the point where I'm sweaty palms, but I am aware that I'm, 36,000 feet up in the air. I think the part that is probably scary enough for me is not the 36,000 feet in the air part. It's landing and taking off. And I think the takeoff for me is probably the scariest part because we have to get this ship underway. And if it doesn't quite work, we are not, it probably doesn't end well. So the takeoff is probably the scariest part. Once you're up there and you're flying, it seems like it's kind of going on its own pretty good. And then the landing isn't too bad either for me. I think the takeoff is probably the biggest, if I have a moment's hesitation, that's probably where. Although it is pleasant enough to be in an airplane taking off. Anyway, I don't want to frighten anybody about flying because it's really a remarkably safe thing. It's just the problem is that if something does happen, and if it's a big enough thing, it usually doesn't end well. So that's the problem. So you can be in a whole bunch of car accidents and walk away from a whole bunch of them, but I don't know how many airplane accidents you can be in and walk away from. So there you are. One of my neighbors, I told you this, is an airline pilot, and he has a routine route that goes from here to Hawaii. And he's told me that, once they're up in the air and they've got hours to go, because they're flying into the sun the way that they're the direction is and so on, they just put newspapers up on the inside of they sort of tape them up. So now they can't see out because he says there's nothing to see. All their electronic equipment is on. But something about that is a little bothersome to me.
It is.
Shouldn't you be looking out that large window to see that in case we, but they say, no, it doesn't matter. We've all of our instruments, they're all instrument rated, and they all sit back, and they don't want that sun just glaring at them all the time.
Hmm.
But that's not something they're going to advertise.
Yeah, I'll have to think
Fly
about
Pan
that.
Fly Pan America West. We put newspaper in the window. Anyway. All right. What else, Dwayne? No news, no nothing. What are you going to do?
Why did you not consider the platypus a living transitional form?
Well, I'm not saying that I don't consider the platypus.
I don't even know what a platypus is.
But here's my answer to that. That's fine. Let's say the platypus is a living transitional form. You win. Would you please show me any of the transition prior to it being a platypus? Any of the supposed millions of years it takes for it to go from what it was before to a platypus? It takes millions of years. That's part of the theory of evolution. Where's that fossil record? How come we only have platypus as far back as we go? Where's the fossil record of the switch from the prior state transitioning into platypus? You win. The platypus is a transitional creature. Show me some of the stuff before it was platypus. That's the thing I'm bringing up. I don't think we're going to find that. And somebody might find one thing and say, oh, we found it. Well, there should be millions of years of that, and we just don't have it yet. So it's an interesting mystery. It's an interesting mystery. We see evidence of evolution on all kinds of other scales, but we don't see it as I understand it. And I do want to apologize in advance if there's new things that I don't know. I haven't read about this in quite some time, but as of the last time, in terms of formed creatures, the fossil record does not support millions of years of transitional fossil. And I want to know what they do with that idea. Well, it's out there. We just haven't found it yet. Well, gosh, we're finding an awful lot of platypus fossil record or whatever. You know, we just don't ever find any transitional portion. So,
I like John P's comment. He says, what makes you think other life forms are not here already?
They could be. They very well could be. If a really advanced society or group or something could certainly be here, and that is theoretical, but I'm really addressing the idea, and maybe they are. You can go on the internet, they're living under the ocean, and maybe they are. They're invisible to us because they cloak themselves, fine, but I'm talking about something that leaps from the theoretical to the actual, where we can say, hey, here's Ted from the Pleiadian galaxies. Ted, would you say a few words? That kind of thing, where it goes, we jump from theoretical to the actual, and we don't quite have that yet. It may be a long, long time before we do. We just don't know. But I think the odds are mathematically horrendously bad that life stops doing what it's doing on Earth in every other spot of the universe. I think the fact is that it does do what it does here everywhere else, and that is it explodes creatively with creatures, with sentient cellular all the way up to full sentient beings. So we'll see. One other thing I was going to mention is that we do have some fossil record showing evolution taking place within a creature. We do have some certain dinosaurs where their eyes have moved. The placement of their eyes were moved apparently for better view over some period of time, and that is kind of a form of mutation. But to change from a completely one kind of creature into another, that part we don't really have yet. And Percy could say, well, if it can move its eyes, it can change the whole thing. Well, does it need to change the whole thing? That's part of the whole question. Why does a creature need to change the whole thing? Why does a fish need to ultimately change into a bird? And Darwin answers it by saying through mutation. Nothing needs to be that way, but through mutation, that means through mating, that some mutation is introduced, and that mutation over millions of years, one of them gets it really right, and that produces a new expression of life that suddenly matches its environment better than the previous, and it's able to now mate itself again, and then somehow through that process over a long, long period of time, a whole new creature forms. It's totally believable. I just don't know where the evidence in fossil records is that actually occurred. So that's all I have to say about it. Hope I'm not angering anybody, because it's not this is not a religious discussion, really. It's really just the science of it is very fascinating to me, and how how they're going to resolve this and what the facts really are will be very interesting at some point. That could be a long time off. You know, and again, I'm leaving magic out of it. I'm leaving that there's just a lightning bolt and everything is just here. And that could be the way it happens, but I'm leaving that part out. So there you are. Dwayne, you still with us here? I think Dwayne may have left.
No, I said I'm hanging my hat on the story in Genesis. That's what I've believed my whole life, and I've not seen anything to change that belief for me personally. That's where I am. Let's see. I don't have any questions per se. Let's see. Oh, Charles accepted your apology, by the way. I'm not sure. You apologized for. But,
and is his last name? Is his last name Darwin? Charles?
No.
I'm just joking.
That's funny.
Little humor there.
Yeah. Well, let's hit the market, John.
Okay, fair enough. Want to cover the S&P?
Sure.
We can start with that. Okay, so you want me to get in on it? And
yeah,
go?
I've already covered
I don't have a lot. Yeah,
so there's
I
not
haven't
much
got
to
a lot.
Cover.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add. The S&P was, we were looking for the S&P to go down ultimately off of the 1978 high, excuse me, to drop down to 1948, 1947. That was really not an outright forecast for us, but it was a preference that we would see that number and see it, in conjunction with a reflected wave bottom and so on. And we did. Basically, we had a reflected wave bottom that occurred on July 9th, and it came one day late on July 10th, which was Thursday. And then we had the discussion last week about don't be afraid to buy the market. You know, no one wants to buy it. It usually means it's going to advance very quickly and nicely up. We're expecting a multi-day advance and so on. And that is what has happened. The market has advanced and is attempting higher prices and very well may break to new recent all-time highs, although we don't have a direct forecast for that to happen just now. But it's very likely that it could, I think, happen. And really, that's it. Just this is today actually is sort of transitional, you know, in the evolution of the market, because this is what we were talking about much of last week, which is that they're putting a bottom in. Don't be afraid to buy. If you have a methodology or system, take advantage of it, because the odds don't favor that you're calling the crash correctly, you, me, or anyone else. The odds do favor that the market's going to do what it normally does. And we talked about how fear makes people believe in the highly improbable, because fear is an agitation, and it makes you overlook any. It doesn't have real intelligence in it. It's just agitating, and it makes you believe in the least probable thing, but you're absolutely certain. You would die for it, knowing that it's like me running up the stairs of my house, just knowing that there's some creature behind me because I heard a sound behind me, and I'm running up the stairs just hauling because I know that right behind me something's trying to grab me and pull it into its lair. And the odds of that are extremely remote, that actual thing would be happening, and yet that fear is driving me, and I know with every fiber of my being that if I don't get up those stairs, I'm going to die. I know that. But yet it's absolutely untrue. It's never going to be true. It's a million numbers off in terms of odds, and yet we feel it, and we're absolutely certain of it through fear, not through intelligence. There is a difference, you know. So fear makes people, and we tie that in with fear making people not want to buy pullbacks because they just know that it's about to crash. That's because they're afraid that if they go long, it will crash. And you can't really, honestly, can't get very far in anything that you do through fear, trying to make a profession out of something through fear. Being afraid of and therefore doing this blocks and limits all of us grievously. You know, I mean, there's many things you used to be afraid of that you're not afraid of now, and you can deal with those things, I think you'll agree, much more intelligently than you could when you were lost in fear over that thing. You know, you couldn't walk up to the girl when you were 11 years old and ask her to the dance, and now it's even worse. No, now, you know, you're Mr. Smooth Talker, and you can walk up and there's no problem at all, and you're not afraid. You're not even afraid of rejection because you've kind of gotten past all that thing. So because fear isn't operating, you're now able to deal more intelligently and therefore have better results, do more intelligent things, make better decisions. So fear doesn't allow most people to buy. The market's up substantially. Now that it's up, they also don't want to buy, because now they're afraid, since they missed the move, that now it's going to go down. So you have to make your decision up where you think you can trade, somewhere between being afraid that it's going to go lower and being afraid that it's going to go lower when it's already gone up. You don't leave yourself too many options. So I like the idea of understanding how, not just in the markets, but how in many other cases fear operates in your life. It literally robs you of intelligence and performs a quick voodoo trick on you to make you think through fear that you have intelligence, but you really are speaking the intelligence of fear, which it doesn't have any. We have physical fear to keep away from falling off of a cliff, and that's the body's response, but we're talking about the psychological fears and so on. So anyway, to make a long story short, or in my case, to make a very short story long, we advanced very I have a knack to doing that. We advanced very nicely off of this bottom, and I will say that roughly speaking, the 75 level is of some importance today and tomorrow. We've gotten to 74 so far, and how we close on that level between today and tomorrow, Tuesday included, if we close above it, I think that's a stronger position. I know it's very, very close to the all-time highs, but if we close above it, it's definitely a stronger position. If we close below it, temporarily, it's a weaker position. And that, Dwayne, I think is probably every bit that I have on the S&P right now.
Yeah, you know? Not a lot more to add. We've had a 10-point range since the Globex opened last night up to the high today during regular trading hours. And we have pulled back, if we just look at today's session, the session that began yesterday afternoon, we got almost a 38% retracement. But if we were to take a deeper look at that, if we were to come from this more significant low here, then we don't even have a 24, so just very quiet. This candle again, guys, was the Globex open last night, and there's our swing high, and we've got 10 points in there. That's it. Not much more you can say about it. Mm-hmm. Oh, the one thing I was going to do when I brought up the daily chart earlier is I was going to throw some volume on there to see what the volume profile looks like over, and I don't mean volume profile in that way. I just mean what volume looks like.
Right.
Thursday we had 1.9 million, so 2 million is a pretty good day now in the S&P. That was the day after we got the Fed minutes. Fed minutes day we had 1.4 million, Friday we had 1.3 and a half million. That looks to be, you know, somewhere between 1.35 and 1.38, that looks like about an average. What we had on Thursday was above average, you know. I wrote about this at some point in the last couple days. When I first started trading the S&P 500, the daily volume was 2 to 3 million, and it tended to lean more towards the 3 than the 2 on most days, as I recall. And now it's an unusual day that we break 2. In fact, we don't have a single day going all the way back to when this contract started to be, when the September contract started to be actively traded. We don't have a single day where we break the 2 million mark. So is that significant? Not significant? I don't know. It's still a lot of contracts. It's still the most liquid thing you can trade out there. So, all right, David, what chart would you like me to bring up now?
We could, if you want, we can take some questions. I have a couple charts I can show, but there's not a lot to add between Friday and Monday today just yet. And it's possible that we'll have a relatively slow week, but, you know, we started last week with a slow week, and we ended up with about 8 or 10 really good, setups here. So what I was going to add is that in the center, first of all, on the left-hand side here, this is the daily bottom, the reflected wave bottom that we talked about. And, of course, this is the market moving up. This in the middle here last night on Sunday, we came out with watch for a test of 1968.69 or higher in Monday's early session. At the time, the market was trading around 1964.50. And indeed, we went straight up from there and completed the 1969-1968 level. We today's high, as you know, has been 1974. And if you take a look at the pullbacks, you can see that the pullback has been 1969. So they're testing that level, which we identified down here as where they would be going. And I think that for now, between now and the end of the day, that level is going to remain pretty important, 68.69 as a way of measuring the market in terms of its strength and weakness. So as long as we're above that, I think the market's in a stronger position, at least intraday. And then on the day, I like the 75 level as well, which they haven't quite reached. Today's high is 74 so far. So this is another example of a market moving above a recent high. You know, this is a level over here that might be considered resistance, but instead they run right through it without any difficulty and move on to more important business, you know, that they have to transact. So the market has a tendency to do that. The market will also react to old highs and old lows, and there are certain factors that are at work that play into both of these, you know, the ones where they do react and the ones that they don't. And in this particular case, this was one where, you know, they had higher prices to take care of, and there's a, you know, as I mentioned before, there are factors involved in the market's use of that. Then on the crude oil, we have Friday, July 11th, crude oil can be shorted for further decline to $100.50. There's one other target beneath this that we gave out as well that is expected this week. But, you know, crude oil's had a really, really big decline, and it's been very, very compressed. This is a 60-minute chart, so this isn't going to be the best way to view it. But this is another one where you had a bottom here that some may have thought would have been a buying territory, but when we gave this indication out, it fell right through that without any response at all down to the $100.50 level. And we've made a low recently of $100.22, and we're trading at $100.60 right now. So I think for crude oil, we are if the market's going to be, you know, quote-unquote normal while it's being unusual, you know, it's kind of a hard idea. It's in an unusual position. It's done some unusual things given all the facts. If it's going to do that, then we do expect lower prices. You can come to Williams Edge and get them. I'm not going to give them out right now, but we are expecting somewhat lower prices during this week. That also leads us into a position with crude where there could be a wild card this week as well. And so we're looking at that right now with the possibility that there could be a sharp reversal of some kind. And so far there has not. So we'll wait and see. I think that is everything that we have right now since Monday. We have the crude underway, the S&P, which we just talked about, and let me see if there's anything else behind here. and that's the dollar. Yeah. So that's basically it. I welcome any kind of questions about any individual market. I may not have a really good answer. Honestly, if I have a really good answer, we're often utilizing that market. And right now, we're not. But we can talk about a couple of them. There's a few other interesting things if we don't have any questions that I can mention. But I'll let you tell us if we have any questions, Dwayne.
Yeah, a couple folks want to know what your thoughts are in gold. Did you see this thing coming? Did it catch you by surprise?
We had put out a report. Oh, and I sent the charts back to you. We'd put out a report last night that, in fact, I'll just read it to you regarding today. Let me just bring it up here. Give me just a moment. So we had originally got into gold just recently, just for the initial move. The real trade was just for a 10-point move, which is $1,000 per contract in gold, unless you're trading in the mini. That move occurred, and we also kind of were curious to see if we could hold on to it because there was a possibility that that move would, you know, strike the match for the bigger move that we think is coming in gold. But I put out a report last night that excuse me, let me get it up here. Just a moment here. The report said Thursday, July 10th was the next important daily market top in gold. Now, anybody with reflected wave knows that, so that's not a there's nothing magic about that from our perspective. It says, while longer term we expect higher prices, a multi-day sideways to down movement is expected now, you know, short term. So longer term we're bullish, but short term we expect a multi-day decline. And that's what we got. And the decline was fast. And if you ask me, am I surprised it's this fast? Is it all the way down? Yeah, I wasn't expecting it to go this, you know, a complete smash down like this in one day. But we do expect it to have a multi-day decline and something like what we see. It's just that they did it all in one day here. So so for us, this makes it very interesting. Gold is sort of the Labrador retriever for us of the markets. It's very friendly and it's easy to manage in most cases. I'm sure there are times when gold is very frothy and more difficult, but it's been a very good market, forecastable and tradable. Which is, markets aren't always, you know, being one doesn't mean that it's the other. Sometimes it's tradable, but you can't forecast it. Sometimes it's forecastable, but you really can't trade it. This market does both, and so it's kind of a big, safe, friendly thing. This decline is important, obviously, and we think that we're inching in on an important bottom for this market. But we're flat in it right now, and we were stopped out of our remaining third of our long position because we consciously held for a portion of time. We wanted to try to hold it through the daily top, but we moved our stop up yesterday, and we had a successful trade from 32 to 42 and so on. And so now we're flat, and we'll have more information on gold tomorrow. And remember, the big move today, what amateurs do and how they think is very much what causes them all their problems. Somebody sees a big move like this and says, well, you know, I really want to get in it. And maybe, I doubt it, but maybe they have some really good reason to be in it because they're agitated and anxious that they missed a big move. And that's where trouble starts. It doesn't matter what the market has already done. You only get in the market if you know what it's going to do. Don't let the fact that the market made a big move amp you up and say, well, gosh, we're missing, we just got to get in. And there's such a thing as what we jokingly say, buy the silly thing or sell the silly thing, but we still have a very good idea of what the likeliest thing the market's going to do is. We're not getting in out of anxiousness over having missed what already happened. And that's where people get themselves in trouble. I mean, that is really an amateur play in the markets. And if you want to move beyond that, the first thing you do is stop doing that. It's just that simple. Just don't do that. And if you can get to that stopping, then you can let some intelligence operate, because when you feel that anxiousness that you're not in the market, it's actually a form of fear. And fear does not have intelligence other than at the body level. Fear just, you know, makes you do the wrong thing, especially in a market. It's a fear that you're going to miss out. It's a fear you're not going to get what is due you or something like that. And that makes you see things and believe things that are not there, and that the probabilities are very, very small that you would be right. So don't operate that way. Just stop doing it. You know, there's no how-to. Just stop it. Don't turn it into a how-to. You can stop it. And then some intelligence can operate, and you can place another trade. We probably won't do anything with, and we're not. I'm not claiming that we're completely free of fear and completely free of all these things. I'm just telling you, after many, many years of doing this, what has hurt me and what I have seen hurt other people. I have tremendous evidence that operating on any kind of fear in the market is very bad, detrimental for your results. So having said that, we're going to wait probably until tomorrow before we take any new action on gold. And if we happen to miss another 18 points down, since we're not forecasting it and since it isn't, that isn't our move. That isn't something that we might have known about. So we just don't get it. The fact that it happened shouldn't change anything about what you do know is going to happen in the market and your ability to trade that. That's part of the trick of the market, is it gets people agitated. They want to be in. And maybe that's one of the reasons that the public gets in at market tops, because it keeps running for a while. It has what we've had now, which is a runaway bull market. Finally, they buy in, and by the time they buy in, it's often, you know, that it's run its course. Maybe it runs for a little longer, and they feel good, but then the big move in reverse happens, and then they're stuck in positions. So we don't want to trade that way. You don't have to be smarter than the market. No, you have to be smarter than your previous behavior. That's what you have to be smarter than. If you can do that, then you're going to do pretty good. Just keep getting smarter than your previous behavior, and you'll be in good shape. So that's all I have on gold, is we're waiting until tomorrow.
You made one of the comments you made on crude. John B. had typed in, reversal in crude means to the upside?
Yes, that would be correct, yeah.
Okay.
Because they've been down so hard here, and they just continue to, you know, have a lot of selling pressure on them in spite of all this stuff. So we do have there's a bunch of real possibilities now, not just the kind that you say, well, they could go up, they could go down, but whole setups, you know, whole things that could really be taken advantage of that might occur over the next day or so here this week. And so in many ways, this week may be somewhat transitional, you know, here's that word again, where, you know, markets are sort of moving from, you know, completing some moves like the S&P on the upside here and gold finishing off this move on the downside. Before we get into some real business, it may be a day or day and a half before there's some really good, for us, you know, setups here. So,
Jason had asked, what kind of size do you trade in? And I realize that's, you know, some people consider that to be a personal question, so I don't know if that's something you want to address, and it may just vary from market to market.
It does. It varies. It varies, but in any position or any of the trades that we put out in Williams Edge, I think one way of saying it is that we're willing to trade in size on anything that we put out because we believe that what we're putting out is you know, for us, the highest probability of that thing happening. But as Bert Schlichter from Daniel's Trading has said so many times, you don't take any trade and throw the whole house at it, no matter what you think. That's just not a prudent business practice, even though there are people who have done so and gotten it right. But the odds of you surviving over a period of time by doing that are not good. So it's no matter what we do, it's better as a general principle to find your highest probability trade, I think, and then just trade reasonably in your zone of understanding and comfort so that you can take advantage of it on some level and then wait for the next trade. You know, if another real amateur move is to have a successful trade, to look it over and say to yourself, wow, you know, I only traded X number of contracts on that. If I would have traded this many, I'd be, you know, standing in tall cotton. You know, that's a real common hook that people get into. And what that does is it triggers fear that you're missing out and that you better get it while you can get it. And then you step up to big size and you cherry pick the worst trade to do that with. And that's a very common experience amongst a large number of traders that they do that. So size is important, you know, to phrase a common, you know, silly phrase. Size is important, but it isn't important statically. It's important as a way of taking advantage of a large number of trades. It's not, you don't want to get super large in a trade, in my opinion, because this was an extra special good one and you really load the boat. I think it's much wiser to say, I'm going to be trading hundreds of trades over this year. So I'll have plenty of different opportunities to vary my size in some, you know, nominal amount and protect my capital and do all that stuff. You'll find that by taking on more risk, it's like a drug, and it forces you or compels you to want to take even more on later. And the people that end up doing that end up with a crash. Just very similar, by the way, to the guys at the gym that work out and are constantly trying to inch their weight up to some new number because they want to say to themselves, I'm getting stronger. And they keep doing that until something in their body snaps, a shoulder muscle or something gets torn, ripped, whatever. And now when that something snaps, they're out of business for 6 months while that's healing, and they have to start all the way over again, right, because they can't exercise that part anymore, or if they can, it's much limited use and so on. Can you agree with me that it is inevitable that if they keep raising their weight, something's going to break, and it's not going to be the weight. The weight's going to be there, but what's going to break is something inside of them. So that's kind of what happens with trading in larger and larger size, and this is not to discount anyone's program for, you know, for putting on size, but you better be careful with it and, you know, judiciously increase your size, let your success determine your growth.
Absolutely, yeah. It has to be incremental. And what you just said, any additional size that you add should come from profits that you earn in the market. Too often I see people or talk with people who have convinced themselves that if they just go get some more money from someplace else and bring it to the market and trade in larger size, that somehow that will cause them to do better. And that is, well, there's no other term for it, but faulty thinking. As it was once said, that does not compute. Okay, that will not get you the results you're looking for. So be very careful with size, how you add size. I mean, if, you know, the indices are a great example. You can trade the indices intraday for $500. So, of course, very tempting. If you have a $10,000 account, that means you could trade 20 contracts. Not really, because you got to have room for drawdown and slippage and commissions and all of that. But realistically, if you opened a $10,000 account, you could walk in guns a-blazing with 10, 12, 13, 15,000, or I'm sorry, 10, 12, 13, 15 contracts, and that's just the worst possible thing you could do. And so please, don't do it. I mean, even if you're a person who is a person of great means and you go, oh, well, you know, that's pocket change for me. It doesn't mean a lot. Well, you know what? Maybe that's true. Maybe it doesn't mean a lot. Maybe you spend that much going out to dinner. God bless you. But if you're going to trade long term, if you want it to be a profession, if you want it to be a source of substantial income for you, then you should learn good habits from day one, and that's just not a good practice. So I'll leave it at that. And of course, you know.
No, that's true. Bad habits hurt. Oh, good.
No, go ahead.
Bad habits hurt the rich. Bad habits hurt the rich just as much as they hurt ordinary people who are trading. A bad habit is a bad habit. It's just not good. And you want to be thinking wider term than just this one trade. You want to think like the Japanese do, longer term. Think in terms of the odds of you being here a year from now or 2 years from now. That will widen your perspective and take all the heat off of having to take all of the big gains that you want. Everyone wants a home run. To be able to trade well at all is a home run. And that's why I've said in many times, don't read the books about people who, you know, their $4 million trade and this and that, because that tempts you to do the wrong thing. There's just enough people out there that will load the boat and get it right, but there's the majority of the people load the boat and get it wrong. And risk management is the way that you stay in this business. You don't have to, it doesn't matter what your skill set is, how advanced you are, it's more prudent. And it'll work out better over time if you just relax and trade a reasonable size. That's all. And just do that and repeat until wealthy. And then you'll be in a much better position to understand that when you see other people who crash and burn, that they could have very easily just simply taken a larger number of trades with a less number of contracts and been much better off than they are today, which is that they took a single trade with a large number of contracts, probably more than they could carry reasonably, just because they're looking for the home run. If you're looking for the home run, go play baseball.
Yeah. Let's see. Question box. Charles C. says, what kind of size do you trade with in the soybean market? And again, I would say that probably has to do with an individual trade, but I'll let you answer the question. The question was,
is he asking me the question?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What size do I trade in soybeans? I mean, why soybeans in particular?
I don't know. I'm just relaying the question.
Well, one of the things I think are, if you're referring to numbers of contracts and numbers of things, I think the biggest thing that we trade in.
Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. I misread the question. He just said, what is your position within the soybean market? He's not asking about positions.
Oh, okay.
He just wants to know what you think about soybeans. I thought that was
gotcha.
I thought that was a carry-on from the previous question.
It's okay.
I don't think it is.
It's interesting. I wanted to bring up soybeans earlier as well. We put out a report last night about soybeans, and so they haven't done. We gave a level out that was very important, that we felt that if they stayed above it, we wouldn't take the trade, and they have stayed above it right now. So we previously, a few days ago, had an indication that the soybean market would have great difficulty on the day that it gapped down on July 7th. It gapped down pretty good. And we felt that it was not going to get above 1127, either on daily closes or weekly closes, and that it would move down to 1102 and 1104 and do so relatively quickly. And a couple days later, it had done that. It got down to $11. And then it bounced a little bit and then continued lower. And that indicated something bigger at work. You know, the market is forces at work. For it to do that, it means that there's a larger force, and it did drive it down to a really good move down to the 1065 level. Well, right in that range, right in that 1065 level, slightly below that, and I can tell you this, it's 1062, is another number that we think is very important, that if they were below that, we might take action on that. Now, we're not doing anything, and we're not in the soybean market right now, but so we have a initial sort of setup around the soybean market that we think could be usable. But as it sits today, just at this moment, we're flat in it. And I have to tell you, I think we're flat in everything right now. I think we're just flat across the board. With gold this morning coming down, we're not in the bonds. We came into this week really just in one position, other than the overnight deal for the S&P to pop up, just we're flat. So we're looking around for another opportunity. But opportunity means that we have a very high probability in front of us. And I mean, having the markets there is an opportunity. You could say, well, I found my opportunity. There's a thing called markets. I'm going to go buy them or sell them. But we really mean a more refined opportunity where the odds are, you know, good, that we could do something with it and have a higher probability that the market would do a very specific thing. I've said it before and I'll repeat it again. The markets are not random. Because they're not random, they have actual probabilities. You understand if they are random, that means there's no probabilities. That's what the guy from Random Walk Down Wall Street believes. The man who wrote that book is essentially saying the markets don't have any probabilities. Now, that you know, that's ridiculous. Of course they do. But his position was, in his original book and in pretty much all the reprints, that the markets have no probabilities. That's a real, real big stretch. That means there's no probabilities for anyone to know anything, because where the market was yesterday has no relation to where it is today, where it was 2 weeks ago, 2 years ago, 2 decades ago, that everything is a coin toss, and that by tossing coins, they figured out the nature of the market. Tossing coins has nothing to do with the market. It's just tossing coins. You've learned about tossing coins, but you haven't learned a thing about the market by tossing coins, in my opinion. You're using a flawed analogy to what's happening in the market. A coin toss may very well be, quote-unquote, random. But if you're using something that's random as your analogy, of course the thing you're modeling will appear to you to be random. I mean, you know, that seems so obvious that I don't know why they have never questioned their coin tossing thing, because that's what the random walkists always refer to, is the famous coin toss. Why is coin tossing always the thing that is analogous to everything else in life? It isn't. It has no connection to the market whatsoever. You're just tossing coins. Why not rake leaves and say the way leaves fall are how the market works? I mean, you know, why not, you know, where are you coming up with this stuff? What are you smoking is what I want to know. But anyway, the markets do have probabilities. They really do. And because they have probabilities, because they're not random, they have probabilities. And because they have probabilities, it means we can weight all of us in our own ways, whether you're using Michael and Dwayne or following what we're doing or your own methodology that you've worked out through time and effort on your own. You can wait for those probabilities to be apparently in your favor. And I don't think there's any question, I hope there isn't any question in most of your minds that the markets are not random. You may not understand, and I may not understand, particular movements of the market, but the fact is the parts that we do understand, both you and I, we're able to do things that break any kind of layout of what random would be. And I've said this many times, of course, they're going to go back to their, you know, their great refuge, which is the sample size. Well, yeah, that's good. I see. You did that good. Yeah, well, that's good. Okay, well, we just need 50 more of those. And then when you do 50 more of them, they're going to say, well, that was good. Yeah, that's you know, it's unusual, but it's still random. We just need 50 more now again so that we can get the right sample size. Because when we flip coins, you can sometimes have runs. See, the whole world runs on how coins are flipped. That's how everything in the world works, is you flip coins, and the secret to the universe is in coin flipping. And it isn't. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's good. So you flip a lot of coins, do you? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I just every day, you know, I take Hershey's almond bars, and I found out that the secret's really in the bars, not in the coins. And if you take a bag of them, throw them in the air, how they fall on the ground. Heads up is where it says Hershey's milk chocolate with almonds. Heads down, you see what's inside of it and the calorie content. Mm. And I use that. But do you follow what I'm saying? Can you imagine the preposterousness of the idea that we're going to use something that's already considered random as an analogy for something else that may not be, but because we're using that as the analogy, of course we come up with the idea that the thing we're studying is just like that. And markets are not at all like flipping coins. Who came up with that? Somebody needs to have a talk with that man and find out where he gets that stuff he's smoking and stop him from doing it so that he can think clearly, because it doesn't work that way, period. I can prove it. It doesn't work that way.
Well, I think the theory that people are trying to arrive or the point they're trying to make with the coin flip thing is that should be a worst case scenario. If you randomly choose and randomly pick and throw a dart or flip a coin, I agree with you that the markets do give you the ability to have a definable edge and to put probabilities in your favor. And so your results should be better than a coin flip, one would hope. That's what we all strive for and work towards. But, yeah, I know what you're saying, but that is, in fact, the worst-case scenario should be. But yet, if you talk to most traders, you'll find out, especially new traders, ones that are just learning, trying to get going, their results are actually worse.
Are no better than coin flips. They may be worse than coin flips.
Yeah, actually worse than coin flips.
And that bodes to my argument as well, is that it's not related to coin flips. If coin flips was really the way it would be, it means that ultimately everyone would end up at 50-50 with right and wrong decisions and so on. But in fact, what you just said is true also, that people end up actually worse than that. And of course, the random people are going to say, well, over a long line of samples, they'll get down to 50-50. And maybe they will. But that doesn't address the facts of how the markets work. Coin flips are coin flips. And markets have a nature to them. They have a whole different thing going on. It's provable. It's definable. I've done it for 9 years on this program and a whole lot more recently. And it's just not the case. And therefore, I love markets even more because I want to go in and find as best as we can for ourselves and for our clients what the highest probability thing that the market is about to do. And in many cases, it can be very powerful. And my job isn't to convince the random walkers otherwise. If it was, I would go out and go dig them up and show them. But I'm just letting you guys know that you don't have to worry about that idea because I've disproved it, period. In any one forecast that we have, we often have three forecasts in one. And, of specific nature. And randomness doesn't allow for those to be right, except for once every, in a great while. And, the results are substantially, better than that, and consistently better. So there is an edge. You can go find your edge or an edge. That's why we call it the Williams edge in my particular case, because it is an edge. It's not a dream. We actually have an edge, and we know it. And we're putting that edge to work. And whatever edge you have, you want to be putting that to work, or you can put our edge to work for you. Whatever edge you want to put to work, but there is such a thing as an edge because the markets are not random, and they do have probabilities.
So Jim asks, what you got going on in natural gas? Anything?
Yeah, that's another one.
What month are we in?
Well, we're in August still, in August natural gas. So, great market, a little, scary sometimes. This market is very volatile, but it has some important things that we brought up a couple days ago. Back on July 7th, we had sent out a report, and we talked about this, not sent out a report, but we did send a report out, but we also talked about it in our live meetings, that natural gas was in a very, very weak position at 426, and that it would go down first to 414 and then 409 as the next important target. And they got very close to 409 yesterday, Friday, but they did complete it today. Today's low was 409.20. So, they're there. They did the 409. And we mentioned last week a further target, but I also have mentioned to our people that deeper target is actually doesn't have the same validity. It's really more of a trend following target than it was part of any given roadmap. But we felt if we got to 409, we could trend follow it lower and so on. Well, today they reached the 409 level, and so we're in the – this is another one, transitional, in the sense that it's just completing a very important target from 426. So we don't have a new thing yet. We're just transitioning out of the old move down. And we're seeing a lot of that in markets early this week. I was here yesterday and looked around and could not find much. And most of these things are just sort of in that phase where they're sort of completing the previous indication for these moves. So we'll probably have more, you know, activity, at least for us, you know, leading in from Tuesday and later in the week here. So I don't have anything else on. That's another way of long way of saying I don't have anything else on it, except that I'm happy to see the 409 get reached in this market. That's another thing about the random thing. That also would imply that markets are never really in a weak position, and they're never really in a strong position either. In fact, anything you can say about the market would be completely discounted if they are completely random. There is no such thing as a strong position, no such thing as a weak position, because on any given day, the next move they make is completely unrelated to the previous thing. Well, what other thing in life can you look at where everything that happens is completely unrelated to the previous thing? Bring it to me. Show me it. Since you want to flip coins and use that as an analogy, where is the other stuff in life that's completely unrelated in every way to the previous thing that just happened? I'd love to see that. You're going to be looking a long time, by the way. I've already thought it all the way through. So those don't exist. But they do think that that's the case in the market. Markets really do get into very strong positions, and they get into very weak positions. And that is a real good high probability trade when they get into either of those, because there's usually a very powerful directional move imminent. And, you know, unless we've just been really, 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 really lucky, you know, then it means that there is something there, because it doesn't allow for a strong market or a weak market. The random walk theory doesn't allow for any type of viewpoint to the market, because every new movement in price is completely unrelatable to the previous. So, anyway, so with regard to natural gas, we're waiting, and we're going to continue to wait. We want to see the bounce off of the 409 level and so on, and we'll see how the market handles that. So I can't think of any other market that's not really transitional today, but please ask about it. We'll take a look at it.
Well, Richard had asked if you could take a look at Boyle, which is a natural gas ETF, and give his opinion.
So spell it. What's the three?
Boyle, B-O-I-L.
Oh, okay.
B-O-I-L.
I am looking at it. I've never heard of this before, but I am looking at it.
I'll pull up a chart of it.
Yeah, this has done essentially what the natural gas. This is a very closely relatable, you know, ETF. That's another one. That's another good one right there. Sorry, I'm hammering on the random thing, but that's one of my things that has kept me on fire over the years. If no one will listen to me, I needed to prove it to myself. You know, it's not that I'm out there with a sign in the streets. You know, the markets are not random. You know, the cars are driving by and people are, what is this nut standing there? But it meant a lot to me. But if they were random, then something like Boyle, which is a ETF based on natural gas, wouldn't look just like natural gas now, would it? It's a completely different market. So how would the random walkist answer that this market looks exactly like day by day the natural gas market and is doing almost exactly the same thing? How would he answer that? It's random is how he'd answer it. It just happens to be that way, I guess. I don't know. If the S&P futures are completely random, why do they look almost exactly like the S&P cash? They're two completely different markets. The cash market is based on stocks. The index is based on futures. I mean, we can go on and on with this. Where, how do they all just look the same, even though they're different? The ETF is a whole separate market relatable to the futures market. We're trading futures in one, and we're trading ETFs in another, completely different ball of wax, but yet they look the same. If they really were random, they would be all over the map, not looking the same. So my answer to you with regard to the ETF would be roughly the same as it is to this other to the futures, because it does look so much alike, which is that I don't think there's anything that I can add just at this point. I think the relative level on the ETF would be, let me give you a level that I think is important. I mean, this is the least I can come up with probably here in general, which is that 38.40 in the ETF, if we close above that, would be early signs for the market having some kind of a bounce here. That 38.40 level, you know, on a daily or maybe even more importantly, on a three-day or weekly. So I hope that's helpful.
Okay. All right.
And by the way, I just want to mention, natural gas is a somewhat complex market in the way that we do markets. Some markets are simpler than others, and some simple markets get into complex positions. But natural gas is often in a complex position. It's just sort of the nature of that market that it just sets up more complexity than other markets do. So natural gas is very volatile, but you have to know a little more, I think, at least with regard to the way that we approach it, because it has built-in tendency towards complexity, where other markets have more built-in tendency towards simplicity, you know, in terms of their setups and so on. So the S&P, as an example, surprisingly enough, has more simplicity to it than the natural gas does. The S&P can be complex, but it often is quite simple in terms of the kind of thing we're talking about. But the natural gas has a tendency towards complexity a lot of the time. And so you get, you know, it has a lot of volatility, but it has a lot of complexity. So you have to kind of just work around with that and wait for the really good, easy stuff to see within the complexity. And that's what we do. Well, Dwayne, it's almost 11:15 here. My, how time flies when there's no news and the markets aren't trading and we have no positions on.
Yep. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Boy, that bearish engulfing candle there on the natural gas, I mean, that really, that's one for the old textbook there.
Right.
The sell-off that came after that was just, wow.
Yeah. Now, we know you can't ascribe that large of a sell-off to a single bearish engulfing candle, but the candle can be a tip-off to some kind of reaction. You know, you don't want to look at that and say, well, and I know you don't mean it this way, Dwayne, that, you know, you're always going to get that big of a move off of something like that. But
no, not always.
It can be. No.
No, no, just something like that is certainly an attention getter, and it what it does is it says, you know, be on the lookout for lower prices. And, you know, lower prices could have been two or three candles. I mean, the sell-off could have stopped there or there. Or here, where, you know, this would have been a, you know, a very believable spot for the sell-off. And just because you have the setup, the candle, doesn't mean you're going to get the down move.
Sure.
You know, but right here,
yeah,
where you catch this support level all the way across, I mean, that could have been, you know, a grand spot. And it continued to fall even through
that.
Yeah,
they broke right through it.
You know?
Yeah.
It did.
So we'll see. Let's let them cook a little bit for a little longer, and we'll see if we can come up with something, all of us, you know, something with natural gas. I think also one other market that you might want to review for those of you that may have an interest is just keep an eye on the British pound. I know we don't talk about it a lot, and we don't trade it a lot, but I do look at it, and we do likely have a bottom coming in the British pound Tuesday, which is tomorrow, plus or minus a day. And because of the overall condition of the market and stuff, depending on, you know, how they handle this decline, we may have something there to do. So you might want to watch that. And we'll, Dwayne, we'll be back with you tomorrow when the markets are probably a little, maybe a little more active and a little more, you know, we're not quite so transitional. And I promise to share whatever I'm eating on the radio with your listeners tomorrow, you know, in case they hear me. I can just pass it out. Yeah, I've got a part of a Twinkie here, if you'd like that, please. Something like that.
All right. Well.
All right. Well, thank you guys for the questions. It's great interaction, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.
All right.
Go from there.
Take care.
Okay. Thanks, Dwayne. Appreciate it.
Have a good afternoon. Okay. Click a few buttons over here. send him out the door.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you.
Every day. Guys, it's going to pretty much wrap it up for us here as well on this Monday, 14th day of July, 2014. Let's pop over. Yeah, Thomas, we're a little late for your question there. On the S&P, as far as a recap, there we got a 10-point range on the day. There's the open last night, Sunday night Globex open. There's the high. And until something happens to prevent it, we'll potentially continue to drift higher. Okay. We didn't put in a new all-time historic high with this. We're still a few points off. That high was back here a week ago Thursday at 78 and a quarter. And our high today was 74. So we opened at 64, we had a high of 74, and so we're just hovering here, you know, right off the intraday highs. And then as for crude, the sell-off, which we know, you know, which was supposed to be the biblical proportion rally type of thing, didn't happen. Just sometimes doesn't happen, whether it's an inversion or whatever it is, whatever terminology he has for it, sometimes it just doesn't happen. So now what's interesting is this candle here. Now this is a daily chart, and if we toss in a little volume, Friday we traded 198,000 contracts. Earlier in the week, we were shy of that. Today, we've got 119,000. Now, the range today, we've got a low of $100.22. We've got a high of $100.99. So that's a 77-cent range on the day. After a day like Friday, you know, with this tremendous sell-off, which took us from a high at 102.92 to a low of 144. I mean, that was a big move in one day after a series of down moves. This would have been a, you know, from a technical analysis standpoint, this would have been a very reasonable place for the market to find some support. It didn't. Plain and simple. It just did not. And let's see how much more data we can scrunch in here. Let's get rid of this volume now because we don't really need it. Get this stuff out of here so I can see the top. Okay, for this contract, August crude, that we are currently trading, if we go to this significant low and draw some fibs up to the significant high, okay, if we look at the entire move, we're at a 38% retracement. And so, I mean, has crude been hit hard and heavy? Yeah. From 107.49 whacked to 167? Yeah. I mean, that's practically $7 move. So, yeah, that's very substantial. But, again, when we look at it from the bigger picture, which takes us all the way back into December of last year, December of 2013, we are at a 38% retracement. Could we continue lower? Certainly we could. The 50% retracement would bring us to 98.56. 62% retracement would bring us to 96.46. We've also got a swing low here that looks to be reasonably important in that it does tie in with that 62% retracement. And so as price drops to the 50, we have this little support area here right between the 50 and the 62. If that gets taken out, then it's all about the 62. Price crashes through the 62. This is kind of it right here. Now, again, that's a lot of distance between here and here. Today could be the beginning of a turnaround story. It is a green candle. It hasn't done a lot. Let's go back to a bigger picture where we can actually see what we're talking about. Okay. It's not going to be an inside candle because we've put in a lower low. An inside candle would be, you know, some indication of a potential turn. But I would not be looking if, now let's do this the other way. Let's go from the swing high to the swing low. Okay. These are areas of potential resistance on the way back up as we attempt to climb out of here. Now, will we climb out of here is the question. This business in Iran does not seem to have bothered the markets. That situation could get worse. OPEC has promised they will take up any slack. Libya is back online. They're pumping. And so this run-up that we had, it may be over. You know, we may now be looking for a new normal price for oil, which could be somewhere in the vicinity of $100 per barrel. We could see things level out and just start to get quiet here. You know, from June 5th to June 23rd, inside of a month, we saw prices run up, basically $7. And from that same time down to today, you know, another 14 days onto that. All right. 14. About 3 weeks. So about 3 weeks up, 3 weeks down, and we're back where we were. Now we're lower than where we were. This bottom was put in on the 5th. So we'll see what happens the next few days this week. Maybe quiet. Maybe quiet across the board. If what I saw last night when I was creating the zones is any indication, and trust me, I looked at the indications several times to see if there was any possibility that there could be wider trading zones, and the answer was just no, no, no. Low volatility. And so we're halfway through the summer. Historically, summers are known for their low volatility. It's a hallmark of the summer. Sell in May, go away, all of that. I saw that play out for a number of years, year after year after year. Last summer was the first really active and busy month that I saw since I began to trade futures. And this summer, so far, has been a repeat. And a quiet day today on a Monday, we're not going to sell out the rest of the summer based on one day's activity. Let's see what the rest of the week brings. Don says, can you draw a fib off the June low to the June high? Sure, Don, I can do that. So you want to go from the June low to the June high. Okay. A June low would be here on June 11th. The June high would be here. Yeah, I can do that. Is that the one you wanted? Swing low put in on June 11th at a low of $40.50. Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on. I got the wrong chart there. Let me give you the chart you wanted. Okay. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and get rid of all of these drawing objects. They've served their purpose. Okay, so you wanted a low June 4 to the June high. Okay, hang on. That high, June 25th, okay. And the high was 107.50, which we just talked about. The low, 192. So $6-7 move over the course of from the 5th to, well, this was just about a tick higher. So about 20 days, you know, 20 calendar days. This is the crude right here, Don. Is this the one you wanted to see? Okay. Was there anything in particular about that you were looking for? Or did you just want to have a look at it? Yeah, Thomas, when I said low volatility, I was talking about the S&P today. I was also talking about crude today compared to previous days. We've had some low volatility days, okay? But our range today, by comparison, I was comparing it to Friday's candle. So far today, we've got a low of $100.22 and a high of 101.03. So, I mean, it's probably closer to normal. We've had some really powerful down days that have skewed what normal really is. If we go to indicators and we go to volatility, average true range, okay. The average true range over the past 14 days, that's the default look back period, it's $1.31. Okay. So today's not, you know, again, comparing it, for looking back 14 sessions. Now, if we change that default number, I don't know if it's going to change our number very much. We'll just go to 28. And that gives us an ATR of 127. Compared to Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, today has been a little quiet on the crude front. Don says, I was looking for the confluence of levels of the move up and the move down. I heard similar small trading ranges for each day all week. Did I hear that incorrectly? I said that last night when I did the weekly trading zones for the S&P 500, the ranges were very compact for the weekly trading zones. And so I looked at it, and I looked at it again, and then I looked at it again, and that's just kind of the way it is. Yeah, so that's what I look for. I look for low volatility the rest of the week. We have basically from our lowest weekly trading zone to our highest weekly trading zone, we have just over a 50-point range. So, yeah. For us, an average week based upon the last 4 years and the weekly trading zones and all that we've done, an average week is when the ranges, the lowest weekly zone to the highest weekly zone is about 100 points. So when it comes in at 50, yeah, you know, but it is what it is, and it is the summer. And so we're just going to make the best of it. And we'll trade it to the very best of our ability. I mean, our trade last night, you know, it was a humble little trade, belong above 68. We immediately got 7 of the 8 ticks that we were looking for. And if you hung around 4 hours, you finally got the other tick. And then, of course, there was a little bit more to be had, too. So, from 68 to the swing high at 74. Yeah, 6-point move. But again, we were just looking for that little 2-pointer and done. The soybeans had volatility. The soybeans, the alert was 1082, target 1084, 2 pennies. We got it once, we got it twice, we got it 3 times, we got it 4 times. So that is good. That's good volatility, so we can certainly work with that. So this may be a week we lean heavily on the soybeans. Okie doke. Thomas says, crude quiet today, maybe not all week. Yes, narrow ranges all week, but overall, yeah. But overall, 50 points for the week is not too quiet. Well, here's the thing, you know. When I say that the lowest zone is 50 and the highest zone is from the highest to the lowest zone, there's a 50 points of travel space in there. We don't expect price to go from the lowest zone to the highest zone or vice versa. It's not really a call for that. It's just that we have a 50-point playing field as opposed to a 100-point playing field. Which means the individual zones are, you know, more compact and closer together than typical. And so, yeah, let's just see how it plays out. But thanks for the question. I do appreciate it. And, again, we'll do our best to just trade our way through it any way that we can. All right. Well, guys, that's going to do it. Again, as I said, for this Monday, the 14th day of July, 2014, I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.